Speaking of lots to get to, let's go ahead and bring on our lawyer extraordinaire, friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien. Always keen to come on the show in a moment's notice. Thank you, sir. Hope you're doing well this morning.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, but before we dive into, I'm going to throw a bit of a loop here. But I think you're more than capable of answering our query. No, I want to talk a little bit for just a moment about this peacetime declaration and walls. Are you surprised? I guess I'll start here. Are you surprised at the lawsuits that have moved against, you know, what Walls has been doing haven't worked out yet? I guess I'm sitting here not being a lawyer, not knowing much about this stuff, just being a goofy talk show host. I guess I'm sitting back here really surprised that we are where we are in this pandemic. And based off of the facts that he is still capable of retaining this peacetime declaration. I know that there's a legislative component with this, but I'm just curious to kind of get your sort of gut reaction to the fact that these lawsuits haven't really stopped him, and nothing has stopped him so far.
Well, I would say yes. I think, you know, looking at a lot of lawsuits, and full disclosure, our firm was at the courthouse steps ready to file one of those lawsuits for bar and restaurant owners about a month ago when he blinked and moved his dials. And that one, I think I'm biased, but I think it would have had some legs in court, which is why I think that he blinked and moved his dials, because the administration knew about the lawsuit coming. I think the one that might be able to land a blow is the one that the legislature has filed, or some members of the legislature have filed, in Ramsey County District Court, where the hearing is next week on the 16th, where they're challenging, you know, his continued peacetime emergency powers. And part of it is, they're saying it's a practical matter, is, you know, the legislature is now set up to, you know, vote by remotely, you know, so they don't have to all be in session. And I think some of the cases that were filed were a little bit more political show cases versus serious, had any chance of winning. But there's a stacked deck. Anything that's filed, we looked at its ability to file in federal court, and there's really limited grounds to file a lawsuit in federal court here on these powers. And he's got the Supreme Court on his side in terms of the number of justices that were appointed by either him or Governor Dayton. So he's kind of like, come at me. I've got the court. So, you know, we'll see. Time will tell. But right now, he's feeling pretty good about his ability to continue to use these powers, probably through the election.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Maybe we just haven't seen it yet. I'm surprised that there aren't more lawsuits against the mask mandates. I'm not anti-mask. I just think that we should be allowed to choose, you know, whether or not we wear them. And this argument, and we're going to talk about this after we're done speaking with you this morning, Jeff O'Brien. But you know, the mask argument that people keep making is, well, it's not about protecting you, it's about protecting others. But that's completely absent of the fact that those other people that they keep talking about can also do their own things to protect themselves from individuals not wearing masks. So I'm really surprised there aren't more lawsuits sort of pushing back against those wide sweeping mandates across the country.
Well, I think there might be one lawsuit that has already been filed one of the states where there is a mask mandate. I think there is a lawsuit that has been filed. So remember, you can't sue based on something that might happen. He's got to impose a mask mandate
right
before someone could sue here. And who knows if, you know, with Edina and Rochester and Mankato, the cities that have imposed mask mandates, you might get a citizen from one of those cities to file something here shortly. So, there could be something in the works. So stay tuned on that. But yeah, I think there's going to be a legal challenge to a mask mandate if it's imposed.
Moving over to the Supreme Court before we get to some of the transcript that was released in the death of George Floyd from the body cameras from the officers. We'll start here. Supreme Court yesterday strengthened legal protections that shield religious institutions from job discrimination lawsuits. It was the court's second ruling this term intended to expand religious freedom. In a previous 5-4 ruling along traditional ideological lines, the justices said states cannot exclude religiously affiliated schools from state scholarship programs, a decision that further lowered the wall of separation between church and state, according to the article here. But now, these same charter schools are protected from discrimination lawsuits based on, you know, their hiring and firing practices. What are your thoughts on what the Supreme Court ruled on this issue?
Well, yeah, you know, John, there's actually two cases released yesterday that were kind of more of the religious freedom vein, and so it brings three cases total where the Supreme Court has voted in favor of religious protections. And so this is, you know, you see, look at for different themes of the Roberts Court, and besides their slavish devotion to precedent and their seemingly, you know, uncanny ability to upset conservatives all the time on some of the, on some decisions, they have had a strong record on religious freedom. So the case you're talking about is a Catholic school that fired, two employees, one for, you know, having was sick, and I forgot what the, with age discrimination was the other allegation. And what the court ruled yesterday is that the government cannot interfere with the exercise of religion and those religious schools carrying out their mission, which means they can't apply the usual anti-discrimination laws to a Catholic school when they're making personnel decisions. And so if you read that one together with the decision a few weeks ago, where they said that when you're talking about employment discrimination against gays and lesbians and transgender, and there was a lot of outrage from the conservative side about what that decision meant, I think you read it together with this one, I think you see that there, you know, this court has been always been upholding the free exercise of religion and not wanting doing anything that would trample on that. So a good decision for religious freedom here.
Yeah, and it was a 7-2 majority too, so it was a pretty solid decision. It was just
when you get Kagan and Breyer voting with the conservative bloc, that's a pretty emphatic statement of where the court stands on these issues.
The other ruling that you mentioned earlier, Supreme Court allows plan for religious limits to Obamacare contraceptive coverage. Another 7-2 majority on there. Do you find that to be equally as relevant?
I do. This is a continuation of the Hobby Lobby case a few years ago, which created this exemption under Obamacare, and then the Obama administration had created some bureaucratic means of how you'd have to prove you were worthy of the exemption, and the Trump administration threw that out and just said you can self-certify, and so that was challenged, and the court said no, that's perfectly fine. So it's kind of a second decision in that vein, but again, you had the original decision upholding the constitutionality of Obamacare, and two decisions since then creating exemptions for religious organizations.
Do these exemptions how much damage do they do to Obamacare as a whole? I mean, it almost feels like while the Affordable Care Act, I mean, is essentially still in effect, it's been revised and gutted and exemptions and exceptions made here and there, that it's kind of a toothless law now, isn't it?
It really is. You know, and that's the thing, when everybody gets upset about a Supreme Court decision, I always say, you know, just hang on, wait a few years, because the court usually doesn't issue one decision governing everything. And it could take years for other cases, different test cases to wind their way up to the Supreme Court and have the court, kind of nuance the original decision. I mean, the court can only decide the cases that are in front of them. And you see, we call it dicta in the lawyer world, meaning these extraneous comments made in cases that have no binding legal precedent. Sometimes the Supreme Court justice who's writing the majority opinion will include dicta suggesting what, almost telegraphing what other cases they want to see to further clarify their position.
Moving over to the transcript that was released yesterday. So Thomas Lane's attorney, is seeking dismissal charges in the George Floyd killing. The transcripts of the body cam footage and interviews filed with the motion to dismiss. Let's start here really quick. The attorney, Attorney Earl Gray, he filed this motion and documents in support of a motion to dismiss these charges against the former rookie officer, Thomas Lane. Gray said in an interview yesterday that the court should make the two body camera videos he filed with the motion publicly available and open for viewing. And look, in hindsight now, with less than 24 hours since the transcript came out, I think it's pretty clear why, even if that wasn't the intention of the attorney, an argument can now be made based off of the way that this transcript has been interpreted. And it really has by outlets like the Star Tribune. And we'll get into this a little bit. But let's start off on the issue of the body camera. I find it a little odd, but again, I don't know how this stuff works that, you know, there is this decision made, you know, they asked for the two body camera videos to be released, so that would include video and audio, and then just a decision to release the transcript comes out. How does that play out? Why is it, well, we're just release the transcript, but not the rest of it? I mean, why not just release the rest of it? Would you have an answer for that?
I don't, and that's a good question, John, and I don't understand why we have not seen the body camera footage yet. I mean, in other cases, we've seen body camera footage very quickly, and you know, there's definitely an effort on the part of defense counsel for the officers to have more of the proceedings, to have more evidence made available to the public. So far, the court has resisted. You know, the state won't consent to broadcasting the proceedings, and the court has resisted these efforts to make the proceedings and the evidence public. So it begs the question, what is it that we aren't seeing? And, you know, we've all read that criminal complaint, and there's already some statements made in there that are helpful to the defense. So I have to wonder, why haven't we seen the body camera footage?
Yeah, that's
something there that helps the exonerate the officers, you know, and that's where my mind goes. It's like, otherwise, why wouldn't the city have released it already so it can be seen?
Is it unusual for the defense team in a criminal case, and you know, in any criminal case really, but you know, and specifically in this one, is it unusual for the defense team to be the one pushing for more public access to the evidence, for more evidence to be released, for the body cam footage to be released, and have the prosecution being the ones that are resisting it? Because that, what I take away from that is that there is a level of confidence amongst the defense team that isn't necessarily shared by the prosecution.
I don't know how to read it right now. It's normally the party that the evidence would help wants to see it released. Right. I mean, if defense counsel pushing for it, it leads me to believe that there is something there that might be helpful. I've also heard the theory that this is, you know, between the motion to have the proceedings broadcast and now this, is that the defense counsel is working to show that they can't get a fair trial in Hennepin County and want to change, and will push for a change of venue will be the next move.
We'll get into the actual transcript once we're done with our conversation with you, Lawyer Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. But based off of what you read of the transcript, what do you think the odds are, and again, I know this is just based off of the transcript, but what do you think the odds are that the attorney for Thomas Lane is going to be able to get these charges dismissed?
I don't think the chances are good that they're going to get a dismissal, but like you said earlier, John, they've achieved their purpose by getting the transcripts released. At least that part of the body cams have been made public. So this is part of a continuing effort. I mean, the defense counsel has a tough job here. They've got a war on two fronts in terms of the case. They've got to prove their case in court, but because of all the statements that have been made and all the publicity brought in, you know, to this matter, They're trying to sway public opinion. In some cases, with some people, you're not going to sway their opinion, but they're trying to sway, you know, as many people as they can to show that there's another side to this story, so that if we go down the road and there is an acquittal on one or more of the charges, we don't have people saying, I can't believe how this has happened. They're trying to kind of fight a PR battle along the way here to show their case well in advance of a decision. So I think that's part of the reason why this motion is being brought.
One final question for you, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. You brought up a couple times, you know, the request from parties, defense parties, to broadcast these proceedings. You and I have discussed that from early on. I mean, when the charges were initially filed, right after the tragic event occurred, you and I were discussing the possibility of these proceedings being broadcast. I would think that in a case that has sparked worldwide outrage, worldwide protests, riots, looting, has caused, you know, autonomous zones to launch in Seattle and DC and other places. Cities all around the country are still reeling from the fallout from this particular event, this tragic death of George Floyd. Is there anything? I feel very strongly that with all of those things considered and the impact that this event has had on not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, but the country and even other countries around the world, I feel very strongly that this trial should be broadcast. I think there's enough public interest and there's enough, there's enough attention. There's so much attention on this that I want as much transparency as possible. And I do not want the events of the courtroom to be filtered through this media that, you know, so many aspects of it are not trustworthy anymore. Is there anything that can be done from a public perspective, from a pressure perspective? Is there anything any lawmakers or elected officials could do to push to pressure the courts into allowing these broadcasts, these proceedings to be broadcast? Or is it just simply a matter of the judge gets to decide and that is that?
It's a good question. There's court rules that govern the public broadcast of legal proceedings in Minnesota courts. And that's why when the judge decided, when the state said, we won't consent to this, that's one of the elements of the rule, is if both parties, the first element is will both parties consent? I'm a little bit surprised that we haven't seen one or more of the local news stations file a lawsuit for access to the courtroom in that way. That would be my suggestion as to, you know, if the media were to seek the right on the basis of there's a definite public interest. And again, what we've talked about, a pure unfiltered broadcast of the proceedings in an effort to stave off a second round of what we saw about a month ago, would justify having those cameras there and having the public have access to it. So again, I'm a little bit surprised they haven't, and maybe they're working on something, maybe they're going to, but I'm a bit surprised that they haven't brought an action so that they can see these proceedings. I know why the prosecution doesn't want it. I mean, you've got elected officials serving as prosecutors here. They don't want, you're going to have every, attorney in the state doing commentary on their performance and judging their performance in the courtroom. Yeah. If there's an acquittal, it's a tough enough case already, but if there is an acquittal, they don't want to be the ones, shouldering the blame for this. So I can see why they wouldn't want them in there. But I'm a little bit surprised that the local media haven't brought a legal action asking for that access.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, we always appreciate your expertise and time, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Take care. Thank you.